This is an iHeart podcast.
I am back, and I will finally give you my thoughts on all the Trump stuff, on the Fauci nonsense from today. Will Chamberlain is here. Ali Beth Stuckey. What an incredible return it's going to be on I'm Right. All right, before we begin, I need to put a couple disclaimers here. Yes, I know about all the Fauci testimony today. We're going to get to that in a couple minutes. And look, just wait on that. I'll get to that in a couple minutes. But I was gone last week. I was on vacation. I wasn't out sick. I was fine. I was just on vacation. And of course, I happened to take a vacation when, boom, the Trump trial, the story of the year so far, concludes and he gets found guilty. And everybody and their brothers reached out to me, every friend I have, every family member. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? So let me just lay it all out there and let you know what I think about this thing. First, let me ask you something. Be honest with yourself. You don't have to be honest with me. Just be honest with yourself. When the verdict came down, guilty, all 34 counts, guilty, I know you were mad. Everyone was mad. Mad, maybe you were apoplectic, but everyone was some degree of mad. Maybe you were sad. That was kind of more where I come from. I'll get to that in a bit. But were you shocked? That's really what I want to know. Were you shocked? What? He didn't do anything. Were you shocked? And the reason I ask it is this. If you were shocked, if it in any way stunned you, you're not stupid, you're none of those things, that's not what I'm saying, but if it shocked you, then mentally you're not prepared to live in the country you live in now. And this is what I mean by that. We have major portions of this country, not the whole thing, but major parts of this country are now fully controlled by evil people who want to do you harm. They want to do the country harm. Now, maybe I just said that and you said, well, yeah, I get that, Jesse. In that case, you're right where you need to be. Maybe when I just said that, these people want to do you harm, want to do the country harm, maybe that made you, oh, I don't know about that. Maybe you even thought to yourself right when I said it, oh, no, that's a little too far. No, maybe a bad apple here or there, but no. If that's how you think, then you're not ready to live in this country and you need to get ready there. Nobody who watches this show regularly was surprised even that much by what happened in the Trump trial. My goodness, this is from over a year ago I came on and told you all this. Donald Trump is in very serious trouble, legal trouble. Not because he did anything wrong, because we have parts of this nation now, New York City being one of those, that are wholly controlled by communists at every level.
Oh, Jesse, but if it goes to trial, he'll be fine.
Do you have any idea the percentage of Democrats versus Republicans in Manhattan where that trial is going to be held? Over 80% Democrats. Do you know that Democrats in this country do genuinely believe Donald Trump is Adolf Hitler? You think a jury of 12 is going to be made up of anyone but communist apparatchiks who've been dying to throw Trump against the wall forever? Donald Trump is in serious legal trouble. Told you it was coming. It's not about, I told you so. Why did I see that? If you saw it, why did you see it coming? Well, here's the difference between those of us who saw it coming and those who were shocked. I understand what we're dealing with. I understand and I accept who and what I'm dealing with. And unless you get to that place, you will be shocked by every new outrage. And this isn't exactly the first outrage. There've been a million. And I have news for you, it won't be the last outrage. There will be more outrageous things coming, corrupt things, evil things coming. And if you want to avoid being, I'm shocked, I can't believe that. If you want to avoid that, then it's time to grow up and accept who and what you're dealing with. You know what, let's pause on all this. Let's give an example of that. Because it really is. It's the most critical thing in many ways in life when you're dealing with people, when you're dealing with friends, when you're dealing with enemies. It's everything. Figuring out who you're dealing with. Who is this person? What do they want? What are their motivations? What are they afraid of? If you can figure this out in your personal life, your business life, your political life, you will have it so much easier. And if you can't figure it out, then life is going to be a constant, a never-ending list of shocks for you. Shocked, stunned, outraged, I can't believe it, how could this happen? So, look, here's a little historical example, and then we'll get back to the Trump stuff. The third of the Punic Wars, just really quickly. Third of the Punic Wars. The Punic Wars were Rome versus Carthage, you know, Hannibal and all that stuff. Well, Hannibal was the second Punic War, but let's talk about the third one really quickly. In the third Punic War, Rome wanted to wipe out Carthage. They gave speeches about it all the time. On the Senate floor, they would give speeches about how Carthage needs to be wiped out, Carthage needs to cease to exist, Carthage this, Carthage. Roman senators would give up and give speeches about it. So the Romans send some big shots down to Carthage, and they walk into Carthage, they kick in the front door, and they say, hey, Carthage, we need all your money, and we need you to turn in all your weapons. You're not allowed to have weapons anymore. And we also need your children, the children of all the high society people. You have to give them to us as hostages. Now, that moment was such a critical moment. Such a critical moment, because in that moment, Carthage had to understand what they were dealing with. If they didn't understand it, they were screwed. If they understood it, they had a chance. But Carthage, they didn't understand the Romans and what they wanted, what they really wanted. So the Carthaginians handed over all their children. They handed over all their weapons, all their ships, all their wealth, all their everything. And then they said, well, now you're going to leave us alone, right? And Rome said, my goodness, no, why would I do that? I have all your weapons and your children are mine too. Now you need to leave your city. And they were shocked. What? We can't? How could this happen? How could it happen? You didn't understand what you were dealing with. If you were shocked that Donald Trump was convicted of bogus charges in New York, you simply didn't understand Alvin Bragg. You don't understand communists. Alvin Bragg told you what he was going to do.
I did my job. We did our job. Many voices out there. The only voice that matters is the voice of the jury, and the jury has spoken.
He ran for office saying he was going to do it, and then he did it. And there's no reason to be shocked. Alvin Bragg is a committed communist. He's been put into that office in large part because of communists like George Soros, who want to destroy America, destroy America's right wing. Alvin Bragg was elected to destroy Republicans, promised he would destroy Republicans, and he got into office and destroyed a Republican. Or is it that shocking? Or are we on the right just stunned by the fact that there's actually people out there who fulfill their campaign promises? I think maybe that's what gets us, that's what stuns us so much on the right. Wait a minute, he's doing what he said he was gonna do? That's shocking. And the right doesn't get it. Donald Trump has been the most legally persecuted politician in American history. I think we could probably safely say that. The man has been done wrong by every single level of the judicial system. Whether you're a Trump lover or a Trump hater, it's inarguable. And Trump just sat down for an interview. This is after the man was just convicted on 34 felony counts. He's either facing probation, house arrest, or state prison in New York. And he was asked about the whole Hillary Clinton locker up thing. This is what Donald Trump said, and I think this is revealing about our mentality.
You famously said regarding Hillary Clinton, lock her up. You declined to do that as president.
I beat her. It's easier when you win. And they all said lock her up, and I felt, and I could have done it, but I felt it would have been a terrible thing. And then this happened to me. And so I may feel differently about it. I can't tell you, I'm not sure I can answer the question. Hillary Clinton, I didn't say lock her up, but the people would all say lock her up, okay. Then we won, and I'd say, and I said pretty openly, I'd say, all right, come on, just relax, let's go. We gotta make our country great.
Yeah.
And it would have been, think of it, you lock up the wife of a president of the United States.
They want to lock you up over $130,000 of an accounting thing,
A perfectly stated accounting thing. But, you know, people also say, can you bring the country together? And the answer is yes. Success will bring the country together because I had it together.
No. We didn't come together. We're not going to come together. We are going to fight. We are in a fight now. Thankfully, for the most part, it's a nonviolent fight. Hopefully, the fight gets resolved in a nonviolent way. That's what I want. I hope that's what you want. But there's not going to be any coming together. Got elected last time. Hey, let's let bygones be bygones. After all, we got to get along. We got to come together. That's the right-wing mentality. The communist takes power, and he figures out how to destroy his enemies. Setting aside whatever you think about any of this, there's only one side that's going to win if that's how we're going to play. These guys intend to use their power to utterly annihilate their political enemies, and these guys think that's really yucky. So they want to just, let's not do that because it would be mean. Well, I don't care which side you think are good guys or bad guys. We don't do nursery rhyme conservatism here. Let's exist in the real world. In the real world, the guys who intend to destroy their enemies are going to win. Look, Dr. Fauci, you know what? Let's switch gears here. This is a great example. Dr. Fauci's in the news today because he sat in front of Congress and answered a bunch of questions. And I mean, here's a little montage of what he did.
The issue of the 6-foot distance, and I made the statement that it just appeared. And that got taken at like, I don't know what's going on. It just appeared. It actually came from the CDC. The CDC was responsible for those kinds of guidelines for schools, not me. So when I said that it just appeared, it appeared. Was there any science behind it? What I meant by no science behind it is that there wasn't a controlled trial.
Mask mandates for children under 5, there's scientific evidence supporting that?
There was no study that did masks on kids before. You couldn't do the study.
Did or do the vaccines, the COVID-19 vaccine, stop anyone from getting COVID?
I answered that question to the chairman. Early on, it became clear that...
They did.
No, actually, no. In the beginning, it clearly prevented infection in a certain percentage of people, but the durability of its ability to prevent infection was not long. It was measured in months.
And they didn't stop you from spreading it either.
Early on, it did if it prevented infection. But what became clear that it did not prevent transmission when the ability to prevent infection waned.
Everyone's mad today at Fauci, too. Fauci's a liar! Fauci this! Marjorie Taylor Greene was out there today saying he should go to prison.
You know that what this committee should be doing? We should be recommending you to be prosecuted. We should be writing a criminal referral because you should be prosecuted for crimes against humanity. You belong in prison, Dr. Fauci.
Mr. Chairman, I have a...
Okay. Good speech. Is he going to prison? No. He's not. This is what the right simply doesn't understand. They don't understand what we're dealing with. Therefore, they don't understand how to deal with it. You're mad at that Judge Mershon in New York. You're mad at Alvin Bragg. You're mad at Dr. Fauci. And I'm mad at all these people, too. We're mad. I'm mad. You're mad. Everyone's mad. Okay, but these are not people who seek out your approval or my approval. In fact, these people hate your living guts. They think I'm the devil himself. So me expressing my disapproval of something they've done, well, it's not exactly going to cause them to lose any sleep now, would it? Who cares if your mortal enemy dislikes you? We provide these people, we give them no disincentive to stop. We've never disincentivized the evil these people do. Pointing out their evil is not a disincentive. They don't care that you're mad and I'm mad. Either these people begin getting arrested and sent to prison, or they will never stop. So there's not going to be any coming together. And yes, we should have locked Hillary Clinton up in a cage, and Dr. Fauci should join her in that same cage, and Judge Mershon and all the rest of them should be locked up and sent to prison. If that's not going to happen, then we're going to lose and nothing's going to change. Pointing out evil, expressing disapproval, pointing out their hypocrisy does nothing to stop, to dissuade an evil person from his evil. Nothing. We must grow some teeth or we've lost. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We will talk to Will Chamberlain about Hunter Biden. Speaking of teeth, have you seen his? Anyway, we're going to talk to him about this Hunter Biden trial in just a moment. Before we do that, who's your cell phone company? Is it Verizon? AT&T? T-Mobile? You know these are detestable companies, right? They hate you. Go look up Pride Month and the names of those companies. Tell me if you're proud you fund that. My cell phone company is Pure Talk. Their CEO fought for this country, veteran. They hire Americans, customer service. You want your bill to drop massively? My bill got cut in half. Here's what you do. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. That saves you a fortune, it's how you switch, and it saves you an extra 50% off your first month. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, Hunter Biden, is he going to prison? No, probably not. I mean, he should. It looks pretty cut and dry to me. But of course, he's a Democrat, and we all know how that's going to go. But maybe I'm speaking out of turn here. I don't know anything about the law. Jury selection began today. Will Chamberlain knows all about it. Senior counsel for the Article 3 Project, and my friend Will Chamberlain joins us now. Okay, Will, what's Hunter on trial for, and is he going to prison?
Yes, I think Hunter's on trial for the two gun crimes, and he's just dead to rights on them. He's dead to rights on having purchased a gun while being a user of drugs, and he's dead to rights of having lied about it on a form. So I don't see any possibility that he manages to escape criminal liability here.
Okay, Will, it's hard to figure out exactly how many crimes this man is being prosecuted for simply because he's committed so many and recorded all of them on video and picture and put them on his laptop, which he turned into someone else. So just to be clear, these are not the tax charges, right? This is a completely separate case. It's hard to make sense of all this.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty certain it's a separate case entirely. This is just a prosecution on the gun charges. And it's pretty reasonable for them to approach it this way because the gun charges are such a straightforward slam dunk. I mean, he admitted to being on drugs in his memoir. And at the time that he purchased this gun, it's very straightforward.
Okay. Okay. Bo Biden's wife, Bo Biden's dead, and Hunter Biden struck up a relationship with his dead brother's wife. We'll just leave it at that. Apparently, Joe Biden just met with her recently. What's going on here?
Yeah, I guess Joe Biden met with a person who's about to be a witness in this case. And, you know, we heard so much about potential witness tampering in the Trump case baselessly, to the point that the judge in that case put a gag order on President Trump. And yet here, yeah, the president is just blithely going to meet people who are about to be witnesses in a trial against his son. You know, in some sense, I prefer he just, like, let's get rid of the charade. Just go ahead and pardon your son, Joe. Like, we know that's what's going to end up happening here. Obviously, you're going to, I mean, if anybody's going to use the pardon power for anything, you're going to pardon your son for crimes that he committed. But, like, making a mockery of the justice system by tampering with witnesses seems, you know, pretty low even for Joe Biden.
Is it illegal? Like, is he allowed to do this?
I mean, theoretically, he could just meet with the person and not discuss anything trial related, and I think that would not be a crime. And that said, it looks really bad. And if there was ever any evidence that some testimony changed as a result, that would be bad. That said, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt in the sense that I can't suspect that you know this person's testimony is going to be particularly important. Like all the, you know, it's not the conviction of Hunter Biden is not going to rely on what anybody else says. It's going to rely on literally Hunter Biden's own statements he made in writing.
Okay, let's move on to the Trump situation. Will, I've seen a million different legal opinions on what happens from here. Probation, house arrest, is he going to Rikers Island? What's going to happen to Donald Trump and when from here?
I mean, there's a range of possibilities. Jail is not out of the question. It's just not. You know, under normal circumstances in a trial like this one, jail would be unlikely for two reasons. First, you know, his lack of a criminal history would suggest that probation is the more likely sentence. And then second, because there are so many different novel appellate issues that are what's called colorable, meaning like, you know, not frivolous, serious appellate issues, judges would be loath to send a defendant to jail if there's a what they think is a serious chance that the conviction will be reversed and they'll get out, right? Because that's not just embarrassing for the judge, but it's also bad for the state because the state would then have to compensate the criminal defendant for being wrongfully imprisoned. So normally you wouldn't see an imprisonment in these circumstances, but there's nothing normal about this prosecution. There's been nothing normal about it. I mean, the guy donated to Joe Biden. Judges don't donate to political campaigns. There are codes of ethics that prohibit him from doing so. This guy, even though it was a small donation, but the thing about it is, what's the point of a judge making a $10 donation? It's not going to swing the election. It's to signal that he's on the team. It's to signal that he's on Team Progressive. And then you wonder why this guy seems to keep getting trials that involve Trump or Trump allies. Gee, I wonder, maybe it's because he raised his hand and said, oh yeah, I really like Joe Biden. You should put me in charge of prosecuting Trump.
Will, can you explain, because you mentioned the appeals process and we're seeing a lot about that now. He's going to appeal, he's appealing. But how does that work? Timeline-wise, is Donald Trump going to potentially spend Election Day in prison? Does the appeal process stop that? How does this work?
Possibly. So, you know, the judge will have to, you know, decide on what the sentence is and then decide whether to kind of hold it in abeyance, right? So, you know, if that's what they would normally do if they thought there was a serious appeal. They'd say, okay, your sentence is a year in jail, but we're not gonna order you to jail right yet. We're gonna wait for the appeals to resolve. And then in the event that you fail on your appeals, then we will bring you back here and order you to report to jail. Now, again, that would be the normal way this would occur. But I don't expect, you know, judges also have the discretion to just go ahead and order you to jail right away and revoke your bail. Like once you're a convicted felon, your personal liberty pre-serving your sentence is very much at the discretion of the judge. So it's not like there's a legal requirement that Donald Trump be out of jail. It relies on a judge's discretion, and this judge has abused his discretion at every turn.
Oh, gosh. Will, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. We'll dig into this a little bit more with Ali Beth Stuckey and a little bit more depth next. Before we get to that, let's do this. Let's get you out of that timeshare you think you're stuck in. Lone Star Transfer will get you out of it. These timeshare companies, they lock you into these timeshares. They don't really advertise that when they're selling it to you. You think you can get out when you're done with it, of course. Oh, we used it for some years, we're done with it. And then they tell you, no, it's a lifelong commitment, like you're married to the thing. You're not married to it. Lone Star Transfer will get you out. They will legally and permanently get you out. They guarantee it, and they guarantee it in writing. make a phone call, one phone call, and let them set you free. 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Well, I don't want to distract anybody from the big, flashy, sexy political stories that are out there. Obviously, we are going to talk about those, and we have talked about those, but normal people matter as much as famous people. You know, lawfare is on everyone's mind now because Trump just got convicted of 34 felonies, which, yes, are bogus, but normal people who aren't famous, they're never going to be president, their lives matter just as much, and they're being destroyed. A 75-year-old woman was just sentenced to 2 years in the clink by Biden's DOJ, and man, what a country we have now. Joining me now, Ali Beth Stuckey, host of Relatable. And by the way, she's hosting an event called Share the Arrows, which we will talk about a little later on. Ali, give us an update. What is this? Why are we sending a senior citizen woman to prison? What'd she do?
Right. From what I can gather, she was simply praying outside of an abortion clinic. She was praying outside of an abortion clinic. She wasn't harassing people. She wasn't pushing people down. She didn't assault anyone. She was praying outside of an abortion clinic. And, you know, she has fragile health, as many 75-year-olds do, but her health is particularly unstable. And her husband just begged for mercy from this judge, saying, "I'm afraid that she is going to die." That picture of them right there. "I'm afraid that she is going to die in prison." And the judge mocked this woman and said, "Oh, well, since she's pro-life, then she should work really hard at trying to stay alive." So that is how our justice system treats, as you said, the average individual, the powerless person who dares stand against the murder of babies.
Ali, obviously, I talk about this a lot, and a lot of people get mad that we have a new religion in this country. We really genuinely do. You can tell a country's religion because you can see it woven into everything. If I go to Saudi Arabia and I turn on the television, I will see references to Islam. If I walk in businesses, I'll see references to Islam. If I do whatever, I will see Islamic references. It's reflected in their laws. It's reflected in their government. It's everything. If I go to Israel, it'll be Judaism. Here in the United States of America, we like to consider ourselves a Christian nation because we were founded by Christians. We're not a Christian nation any longer. Go turn on your television set or tune into the movies. We're a gay country. That's our religion now.
Right? Yep. You are absolutely right. We are a country that worships at the altar of basically the God of self. Like, if you want to create an umbrella for the religious ideology that we follow, because LGBTQ falls under it, but so does abortion. And it might seem like those two things are totally unrelated, but they're not. They're the worship of the God of self. They are the worship of your own feelings, your own desires, and your own whims. And when that is what matters most, then you will sacrifice anything, including the lives of babies, on that altar. You will sacrifice your own body. That's, of course, what we're seeing when we see the so-called gender ideology that justifies the butchering of the bodies of children in the name of trying to change to the opposite sex. That is worshiping the cruel God of self. That is the religion. That is the dogma of the United States. And it manifests itself in very bloodthirsty and sexually depraved ways.
I saw an article, USA Today, that there's a lot fewer, I'm sure that's not good English, but I'm white trash. I went to community college. Anyway, there's less pride stuff out there, apparently, from corporations this year. And that is because corporations are afraid of backlash. So I don't want to call a loss or less of a loss a win, but are we gaining ground on this front with all the corporate rainbow filth?
Well, Look, I wouldn't say that we have won the battle or that we've even come close to winning the battle, but I'm encouraged by this, even if it's just a little bit. The fact that there was any backlash, that there was any pushback, and that these corporations responded at all is pretty incredible, rather than only doubling down and saying, you know what, I don't care what you say, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, we are going to double the chest binders and the packing bathing suits that we're going to sell at Target this year. The fact that they're dialing back, even if it's regional, even if it's just a little bit, I do see as a positive sign. Now, don't let this, conservatives, make you comfortable. Don't say, okay, well, you've given in and now I'm going to go back to Target this June. I've gone 3 years without Target. I'm going strong. It is totally possible. Continue to send the message and say, no, until you are done with this stuff completely, you do not get my business.
Yeah, we've got to develop a killer mentality. Speaking of needing to develop a different mentality, where's the church, Allie? And I'm not indicting every church in this country by any means, but I personally have had to leave more than one because of this mealy-mouthed crap you hear from the pulpit out there. Well, we're just love and just thoughts and love, and we have this hippie Jesus who apparently never stood for anything and certainly never got mad or called anybody names. I don't know what Bible this guy is supposedly from, but what happened to the American church, and when did it lose its balls?
Right. Well, unfortunately, this is even true among churches that call themselves conservative Christian churches, maybe churches that aren't fully pro-LGBTQ. They say that they are on the conservative side of things, but they just won't talk about it. They won't talk about it. They will maybe kind of pay homage to BLM in the name of social justice, but they won't talk about all of the other controversial stuff because it's too divisive and too political. But for the Christian, these are not primarily political issues. They're primarily biblical issues. They're Genesis 1 issues. In Genesis 1, we see the definition of gender, of marriage, of the family, the value of human life because we're made in God's image. So if you have a pastor who, because they're afraid of offending people, won't even preach the first chapter of the first book of the Bible because they're afraid it's too political, then that's not a pastor. That's a coward. And a coward is not a good shepherd of the flock.
Tell me about Share the Arrows. Do I have to take arrows with you, Allie? That doesn't sound like fun.
Yeah, I know. It's not really fun, but we're not living in an age where it's fun to be a Christian, a Christian that really cares about Christian theology and stands up for it. In the public sphere, there are arrows headed our way. And I think you talk about this a lot. The natural propensity for all of us, when we see someone standing up for something that we believe in, but they're getting bullied for it, they're getting fired for it, they're getting reamed for it publicly, they're getting dragged, whatever. The natural tendency is to say, oh, whew, I'm glad that's not me. I've learned my lesson. Now I'm not going to pray outside of the clinic. Now I'm not going to resist the LGBTQ lobby, whatever it is. Rather than doing that, cowering in the corner, we should be standing up and saying, no, you know what? Whatever arrows you are launching at that person, send them my way too. I'll take them too. And that's not without consequence. That's not without danger, but it is the only way to push back. It is the only way to inspire courage. Courage begets courage. Courage is contagious. And when we all stand up together, I'm not saying that we have the power to change the trajectory of the country. I hope we do, maybe not, but at the very least, we can remind each other that we are on the right side, that we are on the side of truth, and we can keep each other sane. That's what this event is about, Share the Arrows. It's in Dallas, Texas on September 28th. We've got Rosaria Butterfield, Elisa Childers, Abby Halberstadt, Francesca Battistelli. I will be speaking too. You'll be coming together with thousands of like-minded women to be equipped and empowered to face the craziness and the chaos of our age.
How about that? That's quite a lineup. If I wasn't a dude, I would show up at that. Anyway, Allie, appreciate you as always. All right. We got Doug Brunt. Talk a little history with Doug. He's Megyn Kelly's husband. Before we get to Doug, let's talk about your coffee. I want you to drink better coffee. I'm not insulting the quality of your cup of coffee, but the coffee company itself. Look, you want an eye opener? Where do you get your coffee? Go look up the name of that company in Pride Month. Tell me what you see. You fund that. I can look up blackout coffee all day long. You know what I see? References to God, country, life, guns. Blackout coffee shares and promotes my values And they deliver me the best coffee I've ever tasted in my life. There's only one place I'll go. BlackoutCoffee.com/Jesse saves you 20% off your first order, too. So go get some, all right? We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
There's wrongdoing here, right? There was definitely wrongdoing. Whether it should have been a crime is a separate...
What's the wrongdoing?
All right, number one, it's paying $130,000 to a porn star to keep her quiet. That's to try to protect your campaign. Can we at least agree that's wrong?
That's not illegal.
When you're doing it to protect the campaign and you are spending money on it, then now I'm going to switch back to the legal. You are now crossing the line into legal problems. Right?
You aren't. That's no, absolutely not right. Incorrect at every level. There's nothing illegal about paying hush money for an NDA. It's done all the time.
There's not.
But
when you're doing it to protect your campaign, it is. That's the difference.
No. What law are you citing, Dan?
Campaign finance laws. You're not allowed to give the...
Wrong. You don't know what you're talking about.
What are you talking about?
Explain
to me. Tell me what I'm getting wrong. When you're spending $130,000...
I'll explain.
Go ahead.
I get it, because you're saying that there are limits to the campaign contribution somebody could make, and this has exceeded them, and then they hit it. I understand. That's his theory. However, this has been wrong from the start.
Yeah.
It does not amount to a campaign contribution if it is the kind of payment that could ever be made outside of the campaign context.
That's not the standard. The standard is substantiality. It's substantiality.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
You're wrong.
Okay.
No, it's not.
I guess we're going to have to agree.
There's been Supreme Court precedent on this. Talked to Brad Smith, who was the FEC commissioner. The standard is substantiality.
All right.
Joining me now, Megyn Kelly's husband. He wrote the coolest freaking book that me and my wife enjoy, The Mysterious Case of Rudolph Diesel, which I will get to in a little bit. But Doug Brunt joins me now. Okay, Doug, look, far be it for me to get involved in anyone's marriage or anything like that. But I just have to say, I love Megan and I hate Dan Abrams. And I found myself feeling bad for him there. What's it like to argue with your wife? Do you take extra prep time? I would take a lot of prep time if that was me.
It's so funny. She was just telling this story the other night. So we actually don't fight that much. We see things pretty much eye to eye on the kids and other things. But about a year ago, we had a blowout fight and I was in bed and it was like bedtime. We were going to bed, but it wasn't happening. We were having a huge blowout. And I made one comment too many and she went into two middle fingers raised, sort of shaking them back and forth, deep knee bend. And I realized, in the midst of this huge fight, the whole scene was so funny to me. I go, double barrel. We're in new territory here. So normally my strategy is just sort of, you know, opening position and run for the hills. Because the more you engage, it never goes my way.
You want to do a more of a World War I strategy where you just dig into your trench and kind of stay there. And that actually, how about that segue, Doug? That leads me to your book, which I'm going to get to before I get to anything else. Rudolph Diesel. People, they have heard of Diesel, right? But they have never heard of Rudolph unless they're talking about the reindeer. Will you explain just a bit about this book? It's hard to find a book that I and my wife both enjoy.
Yeah, it has elements of everything. It's sort of a biography and a 19th century primer, but it also turns into this Agatha Christie mystery at the end, because in 1913, right before World War I, Rudolph Diesel disappeared. And at the time, he was a huge celebrity. He was like the Elon Musk of the day. And when he disappeared off this passenger ship in the North Sea, people thought he might have been murdered either by Rockefeller or by Kaiser Wilhelm, the Emperor of Germany. And there's a whole mystery around it because diesel technology was just emerging. I mean, even still today, it's the primary power source for the world. It completely powers the global economy to this day. But 100 years ago, it was just emerging. It was the only option for submarines and U-boats. Every Navy in Europe was scrambling for diesel power to establish their submarine and U-boat program. So that's why he was sought after by all the governments of Europe. But it also could run on a range of fuels, including nut oil or coal tar. And that's actually true to this day. It's very flexible with regard to fuels. So he disappears, and it's a huge mystery that I solve in the book.
I'm not going to ask you to give it away. People can go get it. I highly recommend you get it. But along those lines, we're told so many lies by history books. I'm sure you are a historian, or at least a history fan. I'm a history fan. And it blows me away, Doug, how many different... I'll read five different sources and have five different versions of the exact same event with five different sets of facts for dates, for names, for this or that. It makes me question everything. I look at all this Trump trial nonsense, and I think, what are the history books going to write? It feels like we've always been lied to about everything. Is that too extreme?
It's always been there. There's always been partisan coverage in newspapers. Even in the events surrounding Diesel's disappearance in the weeks after, there was all sorts of conflicting reporting in the newspapers. You know, and as history gets it, you know, as the saying goes, what you and Megan and Dan Abrams are doing, you're writing the first draft of history. There's a lot of conflicting reporting there. And I think in the same way that consumers of news today need to go to multiple sources, you know, you need to listen to Jesse Kelly and Megyn Kelly and The Daily from The New York Times. As you cover history, if you want to learn about World War I, you should read Barbara Tuchman, who is a little more allied friendly. And then there's another terrific book by Christopher Clark called Sleepwalkers, which has a little bit more of a German perspective of how things got started and went down. So it's always good to multi-source, whether it's today's news or history.
Doug, I want to focus on the history aspect of this, because this is one of the things that drives me crazy, trying to find something modern historically that's not completely twisted up as being anti-West, anti-American. And they're out there. Hampton Sides writes some great things. But look, you downloaded some random history podcast, you'll be 10 minutes into it and learn just how bad America sucks. So if you're a parent and you want to learn more about history, you want your kids to learn more about history, where do you send them? You guys have, you have kids. What do you do? What do you tell them? Where do you send them?
Well, right now, we actually had to switch schools for some of this, because when our kids were, you know, second grade, they were doing an American Revolution project, and they didn't know George. They knew the names of 15 slaves. They were sort of doing it from that perspective. But it was their first go at learning the American Revolution, and they didn't know after 2 months who George Washington was. They were learning everything else. And that school has actually sort of walked back a lot of its curriculum that went way, way out there. But it is scary. But I'll tell you, there's one podcast that I love that covers many topics. Dan Carlin does a great job. He has this one podcast called Hardcore History. Our kids were learning about the ancient world and Persia and Greece and the Trojan War. And so that would be one recommendation. But you do have, as a parent, you've got to get involved. You know, these schools, they want to set up sort of a wall between parental involvement, you know, whether it is regarding gender or history or the curriculum. There's no sort of handshake between the parents and the schools. They want to take your kids, and once they get in the school building, they've got them, and they don't really want any parental involvement, or, you know, there's no way for the parents to sort of get in there and watch what's actually happening. But I think as a parent, you have to make that happen.
Yeah, you do. Tell me about your podcast.
Well, I have a podcast called Dedicated. Years ago, I started a book group for myself and other authors, and we would pick a book and have a bunch of drinks and then discuss the book. And in the group was Harlan Coben and Nelson DeMille and Lee Child and Amor Towles and a bunch of really great writers. And I was talking to some folks at SiriusXM about it, and they said, this is a show. You should do this. And so that's basically what I do. I have on terrific writers. We start each episode with their favorite drink. So we've made martinis and Manhattans, and Jack Carr, we were just sipping bourbon. And then we talk about their lifestyle, though. It's not really about the latest book. It's more about how they approach the lifestyle and how they approach their work and things they do when they're not writing and how they got started and what it was like when nobody knew who they were. And so for anyone who has a writer they like, I've now done more than 70 shows. You'll probably find the writer on the library of episodes. And you'll really, it's a great way to get to know the person.
Doug, I wish more people, just to wrap this up here, I wish more people knew more about World War I. I understand why it got overshadowed, because in virtually every way. The second one was more terrible, more widespread. But man, World War One was just butchery, unlike anything the world had ever seen on that scale.
Yeah, and it really changed the way the world lived. Think about the number of empires that crumbled as a result of World War One. There was the Ottoman Empire, the Russian Empire, the German Empire, the Austria-Hungary Empire. All of that went away, and the way people lived in Europe and the world really changed. It was a hinge point in history. That show, Downton Abbey, actually gets pretty well. We went from this feudal lifestyle, and the Industrial Revolution was happening already, so people were moving to more urban centers, and the economy was becoming more centralized. But World War One really accelerated that and changed the way people lived throughout Europe. And to your point, World War II happened so much, so quickly on the heels of it, that just as we were digesting this crazy calamity that really had no guiding principle to it. You know, when World War One ended, everyone looked around like, why the hell did we just do that? Was it a bunch of, you know, petty rivalries between these monarchs who were cousins? You know, a number, the Russian emperor, the German emperor, and the King of England, they were all cousins, you know, and so it all, they ended up fighting each other or with each other. And there was very little sort of guiding principle behind why it even happened. And just as we're trying to digest all that, as you say, World War II breaks out. So as a matter of covering it historically, it really was sort of paved over. And so I think there's a lot of unexplored history in there for people to examine and talk about.
I agree. Doug, thank you, brother. Come back soon. I appreciate it. All right. Don't go anywhere. We have a great Light in the Mood for you. Next.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood, and history is full of iconic duos who have changed the planet. It is full of it. Lewis and Clark, Tom and Jerry, Abbott and Costello. And so we thought, to lighten the mood, we should honor what is probably going to be the next dual-headed juggernaut that changes everything.
This looks like a regular Crunchwrap, right?
Oh, it's not. That is a Cheez-It inside. 16 times the size of a regular Cheez-It, I present to you the Cheez-It Crunchwrap.
I know where I'm going for dinner. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.